Run! Go! Get to the jibber jabber!
Hey Valerie! It's on Apple Podcasts and Podomatic! Freaking awesome!
Float. They all float. And when you're down here with me, fat boy, you float too.
Hello and welcome to a very, very special episode of the Jibber Jabber Podcast. This week is the first installment of our mini-series of podcasts about the mini-series from 1990 of It. That's right, Stephen King's adaptation from the book to the big screen, or at least to the screen in this case. So I got a chance to speak to Brandon Crane himself. He plays Ben Hanscom in the original mini-series of It. Myself and my good friend Todd, this week J-Mac himself is actually away speaking to another chap who's making a movie, a short film about the original It, the exact same as what we've talked about here on this show, and his name is John Campbell Piano, so that'll be coming next week. So this episode is brought to you by myself and my long-standing childhood friend Todd, who, you know, he was the best man at my wedding, I was the best man at his, naturally. So the reason it was important for me to have Todd in on this episode is because, as you'll hear in the episode, Todd and I, we watched it together for the very first time when we were kids. So it was very special for me to have Todd on this show. We actually recorded an intro for this episode, but the mic, for whatever reason, maybe it was burned out, but the mic didn't work so great, so it was like... if you want to get yourself a good mic, make sure you go to Cinco.com and you can find yourself some cool mics there. Yeah, cheap plug. But yeah, this is a really good episode for us. This Brandon Crane is such a really nice guy, and we can't thank him enough for coming on the show and basically giving us the time that he gave us. We had a really good time talking to him, and you know, he is a special place here on the Jibber Jabber Podcast. I'd love to have him back on many times, and we absolutely will. So we talk about a lot of great stuff on this episode with Brandon. We spoke about the new movie. He had a cameo in it. We also spoke about what got him into acting, and also what, you know, what his relationship with Jonathan Brandis was like when they first started filming it. But I'm not going to keep talking about it right now. I'm going to let you guys hear the interview coming right up.
Oh my God.
Say, what's up, son?
Oh, all I wanted was a never-ending story t-shirt, but Santa didn't bring me one.
Well, Santa Claus didn't go to truffleshuffle.com last year and use JibJab15 when he spent over £20 or more on truffleshuffle.com like you should.
That's right, 15% off when you use JibJab15. Exclusive code to the Jibber Jabber Podcast. Go now. They have trinkets, t-shirts, mugs, and so much more. Everything you could want, from 80s retro threads to Game Boy console watches. JibJab15 at truffleshuffle.com. Go now!
Yay, Truffle Shuffle.
Okay, so we are joined here today on the Jibber Jabber Podcast by Brandon Crane himself. Thanks very much for coming on the Jibber Jabber Podcast, Brandon. Really appreciate it.
No, my pleasure to be here. Thanks for the invite.
No, anytime. You're welcome on the Jibber Jabber Podcast anytime. So basically, we're going to kick things off basically and ask, you know, what got you into acting as a child? Obviously, you starred in It. For you, when did you know, right, I want to be an actor?
You know, when I was really little, I would play in front of the television, and it didn't matter what the programming was, I wouldn't pay attention. It was always on my toys. But when the commercials came on, I was like, I want to do that. And my grandfather was an actor. He was in Gone with the Wind. I mean, 1939. That's when he got his break. And I believe I was 4 years old, and I was at a party, and there was a lady there who was some kind of talent wrangler, and she thought I would do well in commercials. So, she set me up with an audition, and it was for a Skippy peanut butter commercial, and I got it. And then, yeah. It was crazy, and it all came rather easily. I don't know why, but it worked out, and I would do work for that specific agency quite a bit. So, and I do that pretty regularly, at least once a month for like 10 years or something crazy.
Wow.
You say your grandfather was in Gone with the Wind. You said that quite. I don't think people realize how iconic that movie is.
I know.
I mean, it's just crazy how your grandfather. I think he spoke like one of the first lines in that movie.
That's him, right.
George Reeves, who's the original Superman, if I'm correct, as well.
Yeah, that's right. They were best men at each other's weddings.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's a slice of old Hollywood trivia right there. But I guess. I don't say it with enough, you know, gravitas, because as time goes on, obviously it is a classic and it's an iconic movie, but you know, people, it's not like it has the recognition that it did, you know, 20 mm-hmm. years ago or 30 years ago. It's you know, it's kind of controversial now. It's like Disney's Song of the South. Like, we just downloaded Disney Plus and Song of the South is not on there, obviously, because of its content and being completely insensitive. But yeah, no, it was lucky, and it was cool that I had that kind of in. And for me, it was the best kind of what's the word, like, after school activity I could have. I wasn't really inclined to do sports particularly well. I call it sportsing. Like, all sports is just sportsing. Like, that guy's sports is hard. Yeah. You know, but it was never really my thing. So this was my thing, and I was really lucky to be able to do it for quite a while.
Wow, that's great. I mean, for I can relate to that, because my thing is podcasting. So I go to work, and when I come home, my release isn't sports, and it's not even drinking. It's speaking to actors. It's talking about movies, TV shows. I mean, that's literally the heart of it. We the Jibber Jabber podcast is literally conversations about movies that we loved, you know, movies that we love and movies that we're going to see. Do you know what I mean? So for us, it's the same kind of thing. And we've kind of just grown arms and legs as well over the last couple of years. So I can kind of relate to you on that subject.
No, that's great. I mean, I love to see the passion in this too. Like, even before we signed on to do the For the Love of Horror convention mm-hmm. last month, I would watch Ben Fenlon mm-hmm. and Neil Hibbert do their sort of talk show on Facebook and Instagram. And I mean, it's just, it's pure passion. Yeah. And I love watching it. And we've done the show and I still tune in.
Yeah. So when we pitch doing any kind of project, cause we actually take over a local cinema, which is run, it's not run by a big company. I don't know what the big companies are. Did you get Odeon in America?
Yeah, we had Odeon for a while. Yeah. And then I think it's gone by the wayside. I think it's still in Canada. But I know what you mean. I mean, these big theater chains.
Absolutely. Yeah. So this local cinema is run by just a guy who has a passion for it.
Nice.
And it's hard for him to kind of to compete against all the bigger companies out there. So what we actually decided to do was go down and pitch, look, we won't take any money for it, but we will promote, and we'll promote on our show. We'll do the posters for it. We'll get out. We'll flyer for it. All we ask is that you let us play our favorite movies from our childhood, because we know there are people out there like ourselves that never got a chance to see these movies in the cinema because they weren't alive or they're too young. And now we give that opportunity to other people. And we have never made a penny off this podcast. We've done it for 2 years now, and every single thing that we've ever done, we always pitch that we will do it for free because we love to do it, and you're giving us the
beautiful
opportunity. Yeah. So that's all
beautiful.
Yeah. So, you know what I mean? It's in a way, it's like, you know, we grew up with these movies that so many people, because when you think about it, you get paid for doing a movie, right? And then it's out there and that's it.
Sure.
I assume that that's the way it is, you know? So it's our way of looking at it, like, what can we give back in a way that, from a viewer's perspective.
Yeah. And I mean, like, longevity, speaking of longevity too, I mean, one of the things about this miniseries about it is that it was made for TV.
Yeah.
So back then, unless it was something like The Boy in the Plastic Bubble, those TV things didn't make it to home video usually. Yeah. They didn't make it that far. And so we had no expectations that this was going to carry on a year, much less 30. At least I didn't. And I had no idea that pop culture would kind of take it and run away with it.
It's quite crazy how that kind of happens. It's like,
yeah,
because I've always wondered, there are certain things like Star Wars, Lost Boys, you know that yourself. Where you're creating history. And I always wonder, do you know at the time that what you're creating and how long this will live longer than you and I?
I don't think you do. Mm-hmm. I mean, unless you're in a Marvel or a DC movie now, yes, you know you're coming into it. There's already a really voracious fan base that will try anything once, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But apart from that, you have no idea how long a project's going to remain popular or you don't know if people are going to care about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's a crapshoot.
Yeah, absolutely. How did you... So when it was being made, did you audition for that part or was it, you know, did they come chapping to you?
No, I auditioned. I know there were a lot of people auditioning for that. I had actually read the book about 6 months before. I had a neighbor. I was 14. I had a neighbor who was a couple years older than I was, so he turned me on to like cool music. He was kind of like my pop culture ambassador. And so, you know, he gave me things like Salman Rushdie's Satanic Verses, because that was controversial. You have to read that. You know, you imagine a 14-year-old showing up to school with the Salman Rushdie book and people are like, are you a Satanist? Well, no, man, I'm just reading this because everybody's got their arms, you know, they're all up in the air over this. It's a scandal. Right. So he gave me it to read because of a certain chapter that, you know, was porn basically, but I didn't jump right to it. I started from the beginning and I got there and I finished it. And the character of Ben really resonated with me because I was working a lot. I was transient. I mean, I don't remember until I was 16 being in one place for more than a couple of years. So there was that. I didn't really have a father in my life. There were so many things about Ben that resonated with me, and you know, the like right down to the love triangle, you know, this sort of unrequited love happening too. I mean, there were so many facets of that character that I resonated with, and I had only really done comedy, so I got a call from my agent saying, "Hey, they're casting a miniseries." And it's based on It, the Stephen King book. Oh. And we're not sure if that's something that you would be interested in. And I said, are you kidding? Yes. Give me a shot. And that was the first time I really felt like I was approaching something like an actor, because I felt that connection with the character. And I thought, okay, this could be my vehicle to get away from, you know, being the fifth wheel on a wagon or, you know, being the token fat kid or comic relief. This would be something totally different. So I went after it and I auditioned. I felt like I had a great audition, but that never really gives you any indication like if you're going to get cast or not, right?
Yeah.
You can have the best audition ever and there's just something about it. It's so fickle. It could have something that has absolutely nothing to do with you that keeps you from getting the role. So I didn't hear anything for a couple of weeks. And then I got a call back. Wow. Did the call back. Read with another kid. And again, crickets for a couple of weeks. And then I got a call to come in on a Saturday, which was really bizarre. I mean, that never happens. Hmm. And they did this sort of chemistry read where they had about 20 kids and they were putting them together in various groups to see what kind of sparks would fly, to see how they you know, what the chemistry was like, yeah, between the kids. And I noticed I was the only fat kid there. And so I asked the camera operator, hey, dude, are there any other fat kids? And he said, you know what? Between you and me, they're looking at a kid in Toronto or Vancouver, somewhere in Canada, and they're looking at a kid in Texas. But it's probably you. And that never happens. You never get any kind of feedback like that. Wow. At least you didn't then. And, you know, so I walked away thinking, oh, my God, I'm going to get this. This is going to be amazing. Wow. And again, crickets. I didn't hear anything, so I assumed I didn't get it. I asked my agent about it. She said she hadn't heard anything. And then the next day, I got a call. You know, maybe the kid from Texas didn't work out. I don't know. Whatever it is, but I got the call to do it, and I immediately said, yes, I can't wait. And within a week, I was ditching the last 2 weeks of school to go to Canada. Wow. and start shooting. Yeah, it was amazing, but very, it was like a roller coaster.
It must be absolutely crazy. Like, at such a young age, to kind of just go into a film set like that, or say a TV series like that. I know you'd worked with actors before, like Jonathan Waters, who'd been in Breaking Bad. He's the best damn Billy Joel lookalike I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, man. Jonathan Banks.
No,
I know what you mean.
Right.
No, I know
Jonathan Waters is a totally different dude.
Jonathan Waters.
Jonathan Waters is a guy who was a guy, the vine and all that. Oh, forget it. Don't know where I'm getting that from. I've not got my notice in front of me.
That's all right.
So, yeah, you work with him, but then you're on a film set and you're working with guys like Tim Curry and for yourself, probably closer with John Ritter, because he played the adult version of Ben while you were playing the young. How much of an interaction do you get with these actors, and what do you think when you're just like, you know, quite a young kid at the time and you're working with these really big name established actors?
Yeah, for me, sometimes when you're a kid, it gets lost on you. You know, I can look back and go, oh my God, I can't believe I was, you know, sharing space with someone like Tim Curry. Wow. But when I first flew in there, I showed up on the set and it was, they were doing the exterior with a net in front of Beverly Marsh's house. So I got a chance to meet John, and we got to talk about things that we could do that would, you know, help us, you know, pair together. Like, mm-hmm. What kind of mannerisms or what kind of speech patterns? What can we do that makes us the same? Because compared to all the other kids, we didn't look anything alike. I don't even think our eyes were the same color, right? You know, that's my thing. I honestly, having that time, even if it was just an afternoon, really to interact with him was amazing. And then I end up getting my hair cut on location. I get fitted for costumes, and then, okay, we'll see you in a couple weeks. I was literally there for 24, 48 hours, and they sent me back home. So then I did have to finish school, which was okay. But then yeah, we were back, and it was the summer of a lifetime.
Wow.
But it was definitely, I was starstruck, I think, for the first time.
Mm. I mean, so when you're filming such a intense, I've always wondered for, you know, especially young actors when they're acting in productions that are really not aimed for their age group, I've always wondered how that's treated. Not just when you're on set, you know, filming really intense scenes, but also once it's been made. I mean, are you, I've always thought to myself, why are they casting these young kids when they're not even going to be able to watch this once this is completed? How do they deal with that? It's always something I've always been very curious about. How was that dealt with your time on something like It?
Well, I think they were really, what's the word I'm looking for? They were really, I mean, the nature of the material is scary. You know, yes, 100%. But I think it's okay because you're safe. You're surrounded by so many people that, and I think acting as a child ages you a bit as well. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, because like, I suppose a child watching that, like if when I watched that and I was a child when I saw it, like I would view your character as someone that's far older than me, even though you, at the time, you would have been older than me, but your character on screen isn't older than me at the time. And I would have always felt that your character was more light years ahead in regards to how mature they were. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it totally makes sense. Mm-hmm. I think they took great care, mm-hmm. With us, especially with the material. But yes, I mean, being an actor ages you because you're surrounded by adults. It isn't because the work is grueling. It's not like, you know, you're working in a sweatshop or something, or yeah, grafting so hard, but you're surrounded by adults and they have their senses of humor. They have their sensibilities and it can't help but rub off on you. Right. So it ages you. I guess that's the point.
Yeah. It's like in any kind of form, if you're around someone that's older or better than you at something, you become better with them.
Oh, naturally, yeah. 100%. 100%. I don't think they were worried about the material. I mean, obviously, there was a lot of material from the book that didn't make it in.
for
a good reason, right?
Yeah, your favorite chapter.
right. And especially for television. I mean, there is none of that. I mean, Henry Bowers never really cut the H in my stomach. You know, there was a lot of stuff. I mean, we left Tim Curry to carry most of that, and we just had to be afraid. You know, it looking back, yes, it's scary material, but it's nothing as horrifying as like Pet Sematary that had just come out before that, where you see a kid get run over by a car, a truck, you know.
Creed, that's right.
Yeah, there's nothing like that. You know, all of the violence, for the most part, was all very suggested.
Yeah, that's right. You don't see it.
It's suggested. I mean, to me, the most terrifying moment of the miniseries is the very beginning.
With the little girl.
With the little girl, right? Because you've got her looking at this clown that is seductive and is smiling and is behind these billowing sheets. And then the sheets move and there's Tim Curry with a different face. And honestly, there's some teeth, but that's it. You don't actually see it happen.
Yeah.
I always hated the scene. It was actually your scene that used to terrify me the most. The scene where you see your dad in the middle of the lake with a balloon.
That was the day I met. That was the day I met Tim Curry too. And he'd already shot his part.
Wow.
Like, yeah. So when I was coming to set, it was like late morning. He'd already been out on the lake and you know, doing those takes with the different pom poms and things. Mm-hmm. He was walking away, and I was walking towards, and we stopped for a moment. We met, and I don't think I made any sense. I think I was probably drooling or something because I was just, wow. I had followed Jonathan Banks. He was on a show called Wise Guy at the time.
Right.
And Tim Curry was also on that show. So I knew of Tim Curry. That was my first introduction to Tim Curry.
Wow.
So, yeah, I was starstruck. Because of that, I'd seen Hunt for Red October, and I saw, Rocky Horror.
That's a complete pleasure for us. We've always,
I'd seen Legend, of course, and Clue. Yeah. I'd seen all of these films, and I don't think, and Annie, of course, you know, guilty pleasure, but like, you know, the guy's done everything. He's done everything. And it was just surreal for me to be meeting this guy. Absolutely surreal.
Yeah. So how did you, when you knew that you were going to be playing Ben, and you've already read the book by this point, so you now know what the character is, how did you prepare? Like, obviously, for you being a child, and you said that you've done commercials and stuff.
Yeah.
Now you got to turn on the fear for when you're interacting with Pennywise. So how did you prepare for that, knowing what was expected of Ben's character when he was going to be frightened?
Right. That's the thing that I say people ask, you know, were you terrified of anything when you were shooting? And that's the first thing I'll say. I'll say, yes, I was terrified of not sucking, right? Because I'd done only really comedic things, I didn't want to suck. So the very first thing I shot was when I climbed down the ladder in front of the group, and I've got the flashlight, and I find the pom-pom in the sewer. and I was terrified. Like, you know, I probably had the shits all day because I was so terrified. The scope of this project was the biggest thing I'd ever been around. It was a huge machine and I didn't want to suck. So, you know, once we shot that first take, then it was a dump. Like, it was an emotional dump. Okay, I can do this.
You were awesome, so, man. You were awesome.
But it worked out. But yeah, I mean, so that was. I mean, as far as the preparation goes, you know, we were professionals. We get the script, we know our lines, we read it, and obviously the energy that you get from your castmates or whoever you're working opposite of, if they're good at what they do, it helps it come to you very naturally. And so, like, when we're scared of the hand coming out of the book and all of that stuff, I mean, it's ridiculous. There's 40 people around you. Yeah, you're the focus of attention, and the director has his hand in a white glove, and he's, you know, he's underneath this book yelling at us, telling us what we should be seeing and what we're, I mean, he's choreographing the whole thing.
Wow.
But, you know, we're all sort of channeling this nervous energy, this fright. Mm-hmm. And I think we fed off of each other all the time, the entire time. Plus, we had really good chemistry. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't even know if that answers your question, man. But that was like, yeah.
No, I get that. When there's a group of kids, especially for like Lost Boys, when we were chatting to them, they said that what Joel Schumacher wanted was the gang to hang out outside of filming so that they could kind of get that natural chemistry. Did that happen for you guys? Did you guys, along with Jonathan Brandis, spend any time together before you started filming to kind of get to know each other?
I don't remember if we did or not. When I met Jonathan, I was across the street and I was playing, I think, like Street Fighter or something like that. Yes. And he came over on a skateboard and he put a quarter up on the machine. And I don't know if you know how that works, man, but that's,
yeah, like, I know, we know how that works. That means I'm next.
It means I'm next. And if you put a quarter in there, you're a dick. So, you know, I was on this streak and I'm like, oh, come on, man. And he goes, hey, are you here for the movie? And I went, yeah. Yeah, which one? Because, I mean, they were shooting a couple different things up there. He said, but you're here for It? And I said, yeah. So that was the first time I remember actually meeting Jonathan Brandis. You know, he was already trying to one-up. But he was great, man. We had lots of adventures off camera. I mean, we worked really long hours, too. I don't remember us just showing up for 6 hours or 8 hours. I mean, it was always a full day, at least. But we tried to get this, like, we tried to get into, Dick Tracy, tried to go watch that. Nice. And, we ended up shooting late that night. So we missed it, but we already had our tickets and our t-shirts and all that stuff. We were all ready to go. You know, so we were like genuinely crushed, but they ended up actually renting the theater for us and giving us a private screening. That was pretty sweet. That pout will go a long way. Yeah. But I know Seth and Jared had some adventures. We all had adventures. I mean, we were kind of let loose on the streets of Vancouver. You know, what could possibly happen? I know one time we had the Mounties got called on us because we were throwing like water or Kool-Aid filled balloons. I don't remember which. I know we did both off the of the our Mounties. Balcony. Yeah.
That leaves a lot to my imagination. When you see Mounties, I'm picturing guys on horses and I'm going for the stereotypical.
We opened the hotel room door on the 10th floor and there was a dude on a horse.
What you been up to, eh? I can't do it.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. Being up to. No, so, oh, yeah, man. I mean, we were dropping stuff off, but there was a nightclub next door to the hotel, you know, across the alley. And I remember this guy had this really nice new convertible. I'm pretty sure it was a BMW, and we hit a bullseye. But somebody somebody knew how to count, right? They knew exactly which balcony the water balloon came from. The guy was pissed. I mean, he was mad. He wanted blood. So yeah, I mean, it was cool. We had our adventures. The guy said, you know, you guys could be deported for this kind of behavior. No, we wouldn't, but you know, it terrified us nonetheless.
Rock stars.
Yeah,
the child equivalent of throwing a TV at a hotel room.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I mean, and we would do things. I mean, we'd take advantage of the amenities too. Like, we'd go down and try and work out in the gym and swim, you know. And then, you know, the trainer calls and is like, you know, come on down, let's do some work. And then, you know, you work out like crazy and you don't listen to the guy. And then he calls you the next morning and you're wrecked. So he's like, oh, hey, well, have a nice day, Conan. Because, you know, you tried too hard. Like, it was great. It was a great summer for us. We were always together.
Great. You know, I think that actually comes through in the film. I mean, I'm a bit of a controversial opinion, of course, because I've got the most recent remakes of it, which have been very well received. And I know you were in part two, which we'll probably talk about in a couple of moments.
No worries.
But a lot of people really enjoyed the It Chapter 1 from 2017 just there. But for me, I always felt the first part of your miniseries, I just really liked the Losers Club and that more than the more recent one. It's not a knock on the more recent guys, they did a great job. But I just feel that the chemistry between yous in the first part was just, there was just something a bit more magic about it than the more recent one. And I don't know if that's down to, you know, your performances or just the chemistry you had overall. So I don't know how often you hear that, but I just wanted to let you know that that's, I always feel the first part of your miniseries was a lot awesome. More stronger than the original first film. Yeah, it's about, as I say, I don't think it's an opinion that's out there a lot anymore, because I think people look at how, I think it's just the way that that film's aged, your original miniseries has aged. Right. I don't think that's a fair assessment, to be honest. Right. I feel there's something magic about that first miniseries.
You get to see us come together. A little bit more organically in the miniseries than you do in the new film. I mean, by and large, they're mostly already really good friends.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
And then you add Mike and you add Ben and you add Bev, but you still have this kind of core gang of friends. You know, whereas we sort of come together under different circumstances. But yeah, I mean, I get that a lot. I mean, I've always heard, even since it came out, people are like, I really love the first part, but the second part, not my favorite.
That's because you guys weren't as big a part of it. That's what I think that's what it was. It's not, is it not knocking that older actors, but yeah.
Well, what I have to say, though, about the new, the 2017, the new chapter, like chapter one with those kids, is they did something we didn't, and that was carry a feature film all by themselves. Like, I mean, those kids were amazing, and I think I enjoyed it even more because of the era that it was set, because that was exactly my generation. I was their age exactly, in the 80s, you know, when Lethal Weapon and Nightmare on Elm Street five, you know, are a thing, and just the way they interacted with each other, ripping on their moms. I mean, it was just That's how we got down off camera. So it was really endearing to me to see their chemistry too. I don't know. I think it's definitely apples and oranges. And I think I look at all the characters from the miniseries, and I look at the characters from the new films, and they're all strong, but they're all different. So, you know, Jeremy Ray Taylor's Ben Hanscom is a completely different Ben Hanscom than mine.
Do you know one thing I would say about that? See your Ben. For me, I found your Ben really was good at playing on the emotion, because I felt so sorry for your Ben more than I did for the newer Ben, the Jeremy Ray Taylor one. Because when he's getting bullied, when you jump down that hill, really quite a sore one. I really wanted, you know, I mean, to reach into the TV and to stick up for you, and I did feel that way about the new Ben, but I felt it more with your performance.
Well, he definitely took a beating. Jeremy took a beating. I mean, he's punched in the face and cutting the, you know, I don't know. I think it's just an apples and oranges kind of situation. I mean, I have the utmost respect for that kid.
Absolutely.
He's not going to be a kid much longer, but he's he's been great. I when the casting was announced, I reached out to him immediately and said, "Hey, dude, don't let the clown push you around too much."
Nice. Did he
and,
come?
Yeah, to and we'd been name? In we'd been in touch. We've been in touch since. But no, he didn't really come to me with any advice or anything. I know Jared Blanchard, R. Henry Bowers, and Nick Hamilton had kind of a summit about all things Henry Bowers. But
it's good.
No, I was just watching and rooting for him, especially. I mean, it was weird, man. I mean, there's been so many times that they said that movie is going to be made over the last decade. You know, there's been constant threats of it being made, and I was terrified of becoming classic before I'm, 40, right?
Yeah.
And so it just becomes I didn't want to be put out to pasture yet, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I was terrified, and it is weird. The whole concept of someone doing something that you've already done is weird.
Yeah.
So as it got closer to release, I got more and more at peace with it because I understood that this is going to be different. This is not going to be like what fans of the miniseries are going to be used to. There's just no way.
Mm-hmm.
So I sat there terrified and rooting for Jeremy.
Yeah, I mean, it's good as well. At the same point,
I wanted him to absolutely crush it because if he crushes it, all the kids crush it, then the movie's a smash. And I mean, even at chapter two, you have, massive A-listers, fronting that movie, and it didn't quite do as well as the one with the kids. So I mean, that's a testament to putting a bunch of unknowns together and watching what kind of magic they can make.
Yeah, I think that it's a special thing when you can get kids. It's like Stand By Me. I mean, Stephen King even said that himself. It is Stand By Me with horror.
Yes.
That bond that everybody goes through in their life, everybody will have their closest friends. And they'll go, when you get to say, even me, I'm only 28 right now, but I can look back on my childhood and there's all these very special moments. And I think if you can create that in a movie, then that movie becomes a special moment for you in your life. And I think that's exactly what it achieved to your miniseries.
I think that has to be one of the main reasons that it's done as well as it has for so long. And when we started doing conventions last year, none of us had any idea that the fandom was still there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are people who have come up to me with the original, VHS recording from when it was on ABC, with all the crappy commercials and everything. They have it.
Yes.
And they've been watching it ever since. Or, mm-hmm. or there's kids that found solace in our Losers Club. And either they had a Losers Club of their own, it legitimized their Losers Club. There are some people that have said, I found so much comfort in you guys, it got me off drugs, or it prevented suicide. I mean, it sounds like inflated and unreasonable, but it's true. And so when I hear those stories from those people, man, does it like... It hits home, and then you really realize, wow, we really did something that was special.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if someone could do that at least once in their life, I think that's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I'm so proud of this thing. I mean, if you look at my Instagram feed, like right now, obviously, it's pretty much all it based.
Yeah.
And my wife's bread, but but it still means a lot. It's not like I'm living there. It's just now is the time to kind of celebrate it.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And I'm fiercely proud to have been in that. Yeah.
That's amazing. I mean, with regards to the For Love of Horror when we were there. I did see a lot of people dressed as Pennywise. A lot of them with the newer Pennywise, but, sure. which makes sense because it'll be more available now to get costumes and stuff like that.
For sure.
But you saw everybody with their T-shirts on, and I've seen people with the losers with a V, you know, on their arm. It is something that will always transcend. And what's really good as well is because now they can make movies, you know, the movie industry has come so forward now on how you can really... you know, you can really recreate something. They've done it with Pet Sematary as well, which is really, really good. But it makes people appreciate what had come before. Do you know what I mean? So in that way, people will go back and watch the miniseries, people that have never been introduced to it originally.
The Blu-ray release of the original Stephen King's it as well. So that must have been, that must have brought a whole new generation as well.
So it does, it's transcending the generations now.
I think it did, and I think the timing was good too, because while people were waiting for the new film, they would either go to Walmart and pick it up for $10 or $5, or they would go to they'd get it on iTunes. So I mean, I remember logging into iTunes the week that the first feature came out a couple years ago, and it was the first suggested title, which only happens if it's doing insanely well on iTunes.
So
I think there were a lot of people that revisited the story, if they were familiar with it already, in anticipation of the new movie, or people loved the movie, couldn't wait for it to come out on digital, and thought, let's see what this one's all about. You know, people that haven't seen it.
I think a lot of people,
it's amazing. No, I was just going to say, it's incredible.
No, absolutely. I know that before I went to see the first one, I wanted to go back and relive, you know, the miniseries before I went to see the first one in cinema.
Right.
If a remake is being made, and I like the look of it, I'll go see it. Mm-hmm. But I do like to beforehand to just get my head in that kind of universe.
Yeah.
Just so that when I go see the new one, it's completely familiar. And I did do that with that, and that's maybe where, you know, all that came from in regards to the iTunes. Maybe it was the same kind of thing, or someone goes with their wife to see it and they're like, oh, I've never seen this before. Well, you should see the original miniseries, because that's where this comes from. You know what I mean? And another thing, people always make the comparisons between the kids then now, but the Pennywise character, how would you compare Tim Curry to Bill Skarsgård?
I think they're both, it comes down to that whole apples and oranges thing again. Yeah. I mean, I don't find anything particular. Okay, in the first feature, I didn't find anything particularly seductive about that Pennywise. If I saw that Pennywise in the wild, I'd be like, no thanks.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Not a fucking chance. And I'm sorry. If you have to bleep me out, that's it's all good. But I mean,
it's fine.
Not a chance. No thank you. You know, you could be handing out gold bars and I would say no. However, I mean, I found there's something about Tim Curry's seductiveness that sort of created this fog over Derry in ours. You know, that it was a fog anywhere you went. It wasn't. I would say it was a broader terror. I think that's the best way to put it. But I think we got a lot more out of Bill Skarsgård's Pennywise in the second, in chapter two, that actually explained a lot more to me about that character. It totally reminds me of when Johnny Depp did Willy Wonka, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he threw in a kind of dark Michael Jackson.
That's true.
You know, sort of childlike. Mm-hmm. And I mean, Tim Curry's Pennywise was very much old world vaudeville.
Yeah.
You know, he was the panto Pennywise, you know, whereas Bill Skarsgård to me just seemed more like a child. And that in and of itself is terrifying.
Yeah,
I'm not trying to be a politician. I mean, it's just, they're completely different, and I enjoyed them both. But after seeing chapter two, it makes a lot more sense to me.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there's a lot you get to glean from Bill Skarsgård's Pennywise.
I mean, they're both terrifying. I mean, as I mentioned before we came on, that original video box art of Pennywise pulling back with the big, long, creepy fingers still can terrify kids. And, of course, we've had the reports of the Chapter 2 scaring kids as well. But, yeah, they're both scary in their own right. If they can terrify kids, and they're doing their job, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but, no, I'm...
Sorry, on you go.
Oh, no, I was just agreeing with you. It's iconic. It is iconic art. And it's amazing that it can still elicit. I mean, there are moments in our miniseries that have not aged well.
the thing, that wee thing, was it the seaweed monster guy? And it's your scene where he comes, he puts his hand up. He's like,
for me, it's
if you look hard enough, you can probably see the servos and the arms pushing the thing. I mean, but it was very effective at the time. And especially in 420, it was very effective. But now, put to high resolution and just because of how sophisticated entertainment is now, it is what it is. The stop motion in the shower and in the sewer, it is what it is.
I mean, we weren't born when it first aired, but from what we read, I mean, it was when it first aired, it was like the most terrifying thing anybody had ever seen on television. There was there complaints? Was there like, this is too scary, we can't put this on? Was there anything like that?
I think it was a departure. I mean, it was definitely something new for ABC, and it was new. That genre is not really well represented, in television back then, unless it was really late night programming. But even then, it would be the old Universal monsters and things like that. But now, I mean, yes, there were definitely complaints. There were people who didn't enjoy it, or they thought that it was terrible for kids. And I know so many people who recorded it and then watched it on their own time without their parents. You know, they did it anyway. They were curious. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I think for its day, it was effective. But, looking back, it is what it is. People still love it. Yeah.
Of course. So you actually played a cameo part in part two, right?
I did.
So I did. How did they approach you for that? Or did you go to them?
Well, yeah, kind of. It's kind of both. I think when the trailer dropped, I was on Facebook and I reached out to the director on Facebook for whatever it was worth. I mean, he's, the golden boy of Hollywood right now. Yeah. But I had no expectation that he'd even see my message. But I just said, hey, Ben, class of 1990 here. I can't wait to see the finished product.
Mm-hmm.
And then he chimed right back. And we just opened up a dialogue. And so then I went and saw chapter one. And the first thing I did when I came home was tell my wife about it. The second thing I did was send a message back to Andy on Facebook saying, okay, dude, this exceeded my wildest expectations.
Wow.
This was amazing. I mean, I enjoyed it start to finish. And there's something you can say about chapter one, and that is, if it didn't have a chapter two, that would be okay.
Yeah.
The way it was put together, the story, the journey, it comes to an end. I mean, I think it was just done so deftly. It was something else. So I reached out to him and he said, yeah, well, you should do a cameo.
That's amazing.
And I went, what? And then I look at it and I go, wait, he's not even verified. So maybe all this time I'm being trolled by a super fan. So I went over to Instagram where he was verified, and I said, okay, at the risk of my own embarrassment, am I getting trolled here on Facebook? Nothing. He left me on red for a little while, and then he chimed back and said, yes, I'm the troll. And I'm like, thank God. But wow, the universe really works this way. You're bringing me back from the dead on Instagram. That's amazing. So we talked about it, from time to time we'd check in, and I think in April they needed me to record the scene. The scene was written much longer than the cut.
Right.
There's a lot more fakery. I mean, it was really intended to really make you question who Ben really is. Is this Ben? Mm-hmm. Wait, is that guy going to be Ben? And then, you know, obviously they cut to the conference call and there's the hot guy on the television. But, you know, it was shot longer than the cut. And anyway, they wanted to see it. So I did a self-tape for a New Line so they could sign off on it. I mean, Andy said they did backflips when he pitched the idea. Uh-huh. But I think after all this time, they wanted to see if I could still do the work. So I submitted the tape and it worked out. And so, yeah, about a year to the day after we talked about it, I'm standing in front of a camera for the first time in 10 years. It was awesome and terrifying once again.
That must have been an experience. You know, it's funny because they actually credit you as the big guy on IMDb.
Right. Yeah.
The big guy.
I'm trying to remember what the thing was. Oh, yeah. Well, that's better because in the script, I think it was overweight man.
What? They actually put that in a script?
Yeah, because I don't think they thought about that being for me. I wouldn't even presume that they did it for me. Yeah, they did it because that was an easier way of introducing Ben than the whole Ricky Lee thing in the bar in Texas. It was much more expedient. So I think I just happened to fit the bill. And it worked out. That's fine. It's all good. I mean, not Ben would have been cool too, but I'm happy for the credit.
No, and it's good. It's good. You're an Easter egg now. And I thought that's awesome. And I have watched a couple, like, because when I watch a movie and I enjoy it, like I did with the new two movies, I will go home and I'll do a wee bit of research on it. And I like to know all the trivia. I mean, that's what our show is basically based on. And I did watch one back when I watched the second part, and it did, your name came up in it, and I was like, oh, that's brilliant. So I take it you are the only, I didn't see any of the other guys in any cameo.
Sadly. Yeah. No, sadly. I remember when there was a question at For the Love of Horror. Mm-hmm. There was a question from someone in the audience during one of the panels who was like, so, well, how come everybody else didn't get a cameo? And I stood up and started walking off stage. Like, I can't, I don't want to take the hit for that. I think it just worked out. I don't think it was intended to be a slight or anything. And I think if you read enough about Andy and his cameos, they are really deliberate.
Yeah.
Good. Almost masterful. I mean, he was going to have Guillermo del Toro do the guy that adult Ben runs into when he's running through the hallway lockers.
Yeah.
But he couldn't make it. He had Stephen King, he had Peter Bogdanovich.
Yeah, that's right.
He had himself and he had Barbara. And I think that's it. But I think he does those masterfully. I mean, the alternative would have been like Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
You know?
The new one. The latest one.
That was too much. That was too much. It was distracting and you've like, is the universe the same or is it different? What's the deal? Like, why would you do that? And I think you, the way Andy did it, they remain separate universes. Even though I'm in it, it's not at all like.
Yeah, but it was a nice wee nod for the fans to say, oh, wow, there's Ben and Ben. However, I do think the new Ben was too ridiculously good looking, the older version. You don't think?
No, he's very, very good looking. He's a great actor, too. I mean, I think, but I think you can draw a lot of parallels between his face and Jeremy's. And I think, I think it was great casting. It really was great casting.
Oh, the casting in that film is unbelievable. Mm-hmm. I mean, some of the actors, I mean, I wouldn't say they're unknown because they've obviously done other big projects as well, but whoever did the cast in that film needs a round of applause because that was one of the best aspects of that second movie. If they hadn't got that right, that movie was not going to do as well as the first one, you say, but... who knows what would have turned like if it wasn't for that casting.
Yeah, I think because the first chapter was so well received. I mean, it was art. Mm-hmm. It was not just horror, but it was comedic, but it was also epic. I mean, it was a a perfect film, in my opinion. And I don't think he would have had much trouble at all filling those roles, because who wouldn't want to be associated with something that good, that amazing? You know, he did an amazing job with those kids. And I remember talking with Andy before we shot. We were in Toronto, and I remember asking him all these questions. He was picking my brain, and I was like shoveling through his, like, dude, what's this, and why did you do that, and where did you find Sophia Lillis? Because she's amazing. I mean, she is. She's amazing, and he said, "Oh, I had to fight for her."
Wow.
And I'm thinking, what? Why would you have to fight for that? I mean, she's just was incredible. But I think it had to do with how much of an impact that character had in the arc. I think she's better represented in that film than she is in the miniseries, right?
I
think so.
Mm-hmm.
I think so. Sure. But anyway, yeah. So, you know, we were just kind of talking about that. And so the casting, I think, who wouldn't want to be associated with it? And I think he was really deliberate about his bends. I mean, there's this great actor in Atlanta. His name is Shane Hartland. Mm-hmm. And he made his submission for Ben, adult Ben, public. Like, you could Google it. You could Google it or Google his reel, and it's on there. And it's him doing that scene where we meet Ben in a bar. Like, it would have been if it had been adapted directly from the book.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was the lengths that people were willing to go. I don't know how much money he spent on that, because it was lit. It was cast. He had other people in it. I mean, it was beautiful. And I'm thinking, wow, this is not a business I'm prepared to jump into if that's the kind of shit you have to do to get a part.
Wow.
You know, who could afford it? But he really, I mean, he was one of scores of people who would have been amazing for that role. So anyway, Andy did well. He did well casting the adults.
Unbelievably well. So in the original miniseries, what you worked obviously with Tommy Lee Wallace. And did you get to work a lot with Stephen King? Was he around when you were filming?
No. After all these years, I've still never managed to meet Stephen King.
What? He's obviously aware of you then, right?
I think so, but I don't. I haven't been able to meet Stephen King. It's crazy.
That is crazy.
Was he not at the premiere of at Chapter 2? Was he not there?
No, he wasn't there. He wasn't there. I know.
I'm not going to go to the premiere of my own.
No, I know, and I know. I know Seth Green was at the premiere for Chapter 1, mm-hmm. and so when I went to Chapter 2, I thought, okay, you know, it's cool. I'll get to reconnect with Seth, because Seth has been sort of the missing secret sauce in our reunions.
Mm-hmm.
But the guy's busy. Right. I mean, we're, you know, it's a different game for him than it is for us. So, you know, but I was really hoping to connect and hang up, but he didn't make it. He had something else going on. He just released his first feature, so he was doing that. I've never met Stephen King. I would love to meet Stephen King. What would I do when I meet Stephen King? I have no idea.
Do you think he'd recognize you?
Probably not. But that's okay. That's okay. I knew he was going to do a cameo a little earlier when I got picked up at the airport.
Mm-hmm.
They had just shot his scene. I mean, Stephen King's thing was a role more than a cameo.
Yeah.
I mean, I think is probably my favorite Stephen King cameo ever.
It was good. He was kind of poking fun at himself, right?
100%. I mean, and that was a great theme to carry through Chapter 2.
Yeah.
Your endings suck.
It's a clever way to deal with that.
Yeah, and you know, the guy who has been known to hate interpretations of his work, giving that much of himself to this project is a testament to his confidence in Andy and, you know, the production team, how happy he was, I think, with the end result of the first chapter.
Yeah, what an absolute, like, as for a passion project. I mean, because no one makes movies as great as that without any passion. And I know that there must be people in the business that do it, and they do work purely for the money. But you can tell when there's passion in it. And I truly believe from these past two movies, the first chapter and the second chapter, you can feel it. Someone had, you know, he had the love for that.
Yeah, I mean, it was surreal. When I met Andy for the first time face-to-face, we were in the lobby of the hotel, and I was at the front desk or something like that, and he came whirring in. He went to his first hockey game ever. And then he's like, let's go out to dinner. I said, okay, no problem. And so, you know, we shared an Uber to this restaurant where a couple of the FX people were already eating. You know, we're going to have a dinner. And he's like, I can't believe I'm sitting in a car with you, man. And I'm like, what? I can't believe I'm sitting in a car with you. You know, you're a big effing deal now, man. No, thank you for the vacation. And thank you for, you know, being such a fan of the miniseries. And it turns out he had been for quite some time. I mean, so mm-hmm. when you say passion, this has been a long standing passion for him.
Yeah.
And I, having worked with him, there's a lot of heart there, and a ridiculous amount of heart. But he's also, I don't know, there's so much integrity with everything that guy does. It's not deliberate. It's not, everything he does is deliberate. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And any choices that you think you're making as an actor, he's already made for you, you know, five or six different ways. And he knows what he wants, you know. So he's already a couple of steps ahead of you.
Yeah, I think Hollywood especially needs more writers and directors like that. Would you agree?
100%. 100%. And it's, you know, yes, there's money. I mean, I'm sure Andy is bathing in money because of this thing. But he has integrity.
Yeah.
And I, you know, there are people who show so much promise and people who are so celebrated for their passion, and then it's sad because you can see the passion wane, or you can see it disappear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with some big shots, and I don't imagine that's going to be Andy's case.
Yeah, because, no, definitely not.
You know, I mean, he's you know kind of who he is based on what his likes are, and I mean, there's stuff that you see on IMDb in the pipeline for him. Robotech, hello. I grew up on that, you know.
Yeah.
Nerd, hello. I mean, he's. I feel like he's. He's got nowhere to go but galactic.
I yeah.
mean, that guy's, and he's gonna do the Flash now. I mean, so I mean, there's what? There's nothing that I think he's not gonna be able to do.
No, I mean. I'd like to see him take that kind of passion and work it into some really, really good future projects. Because one thing that stands out a mile away is truly when someone puts their heart and soul into a movie and it's not about the money.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't hurt, right?
No.
But I mean, I think everything you're going to see from Andy moving forward will stay deliberate.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be because he likes it, because he loves it. Not because he needs the money.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the best way forward. I mean, we've never worked for money doing the podcast because it's purely for passion. And I think, you know, we would do this forever if we just didn't have to pay for bills. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
We would 100%. Do it 24/7. So that's the key, I think, in any kind of project.
Yeah. I've just got one more question to ask you, because we've asked quite a lot of questions about it and all the projects you've worked on. But of course, it's my understanding that you run your own theatre group at this moment in time. Is that correct? You're still... I did.
I resigned a couple months ago. It's just... It's too much, man. Mm-hmm. I live in a kind of small sort of town. It's... I don't know. It's kind of like what Dundee is to Edinburgh, you know? It's it's the fringe, you know?
Yeah.
But there's just not... it's hard to get money for performing arts where we are. The schools are incredibly well supported, but you know, it's just not a theater going public. So they're sort of reorganizing, but keeping something like that going, the theater company had been around for 30 years. So I'd only been involved for a few. There was no doubt it's going to continue on and do its thing, but it's just a hell of a lot of work.
I'm sorry to hear about that. I mean, before we let you go, that one more question for yourself, Brandon.
Yeah.
What does the future hold for yourself? Do you have any future projects coming up?
I've got something I can't really announce yet, but I'm going to be working on a short film in May. So I've got something that to look forward to, I'm kind of dipping my toe back in the pool.
That'd be great.
I think it's cool. I mean, I had a great time working on Chapter 2. I realized how much I missed the work, because, you know, it's not particularly glamorous for anyone, regardless of your level of fame or stardom. I mean, it is work.
Yeah,
absolutely. You know, people forget that.
People forget. You know, you're being paid to be someone else, but you're also being paid to sit your ass down for 10 hours a day and basically repeat history 100 times. You know, it's mentally challenging, and you know, it's. But I miss that work. I enjoy it so much.
Yeah.
So. I'm hoping that there'll be a couple of projects to work on for next amazing. Year.
That'd be great. Final question, actually. Who, of any series, of any kind of movie franchise, if you could get handed a book tomorrow and there are all these roles, what role would you love to play?
Oh my.
It's a question and a half, isn't it?
that's huge. I mean, within this genre or within like just anything?
Absolutely anything. If someone to the point where you'd be like, I would do that full movie for free.
If I could do that movie for free, who would it be? Oh, man. That's huge, dude. That's huge. Honestly, I can't even think of something. I think I would be happy being the guy on the left rolling his eyes. I'd do that for free. I don't know. I honestly I don't think of things that way. Oddly. I do sing as well. I think there are some favorite roles that I would like to play on stage for sure.
What if they made remade Little Shop of Horrors again? Would that be a role? Because I know you did Little Shop of Horrors. I know that's one of
it. Oh yeah, yeah. No, I think I think I'm more inclined to be Mr. Mushnick now. But but yeah, I mean there are certainly roles that I would like to do. But as far as like coming from fiction to film, I can't really think of anything offhand. Wow. What a shit answer. Sorry.
No, that's fine. So if anyone ever asks me, it would be the Rocky Horror Picture Show. I would love to play Riff Raff.
Riff Raff.
Riff Raff. Yes, I think perhaps you better both come inside.
Well, you've gotten half the work done already.
well.
That's good.
Three quarters. No, I'm looking.
Okay, yeah, sorry.
I didn't mean
to cut you down.
It was purely just with the lack of hair.
No, that's... And that's the other thing too. Like you look at it at these people that have done like these iconic parts. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I had any kind of hero worship, I would say I would love to be Bruce Campbell someday.
Oh, yes.
You know what I mean? I mean, yes. As far as like the horror genre goes, the Evil Dead movies are my absolute favorite.
Wow.
And so I mean, I looked up to Bruce Campbell from the time. I don't know. I was probably 14, 15 because he was, you know, this stoic sort of comedic badass, but you know, I might take some growth pills or whatever and get some of my hair back and go get cut and maybe I'll just do that for Halloween. I don't know. I would love to
Just a side note, but Bruce Campbell, I think he had the best portrayal of Elvis on screen ever.
Oh my god, that movie. That movie was crazy.
Nobody has done a better Elvis Presley than Bruce Campbell, and I will fight somebody. Like, nobody else. Kurt Russell, get out of town. Bruce Campbell is the best Elvis Presley on screen.
Oh my god, that movie. That was something else, man.
It's just great. I'm just looking at the DVD in Kevin's room there. I've just got mind. I was like, yeah, he played the Elvis name. Anyway.
But my both team. Yeah. So, Brandon, it's been an absolute pleasure to present you here. There it is. There you go. There's the role. There's the role right there.
Well, thank you very much.
As Elvis Presley.
Yeah. I'd like to introduce Charlie Hodge. He's a friend of mine. He gives me my towels. Yeah, I know.
That's anyway. Actually really good.
Wow, we've just totally lost the plot there. No, man, I loved Elvis growing up, especially Elvis. Fat Elvis. Elvis was my favorite. You know, the carbohydrate jumpsuit Elvis.
People criticize Fat Elvis, but I love it with the whole da 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 da.
Nobody entered a stage like that guy did. You know, like my favorite. I think my favorite one was. What my favorite entrance was his Aloha from Hawaii.
Oh, yeah.
That concert, the Hawaiian, because it
never mind. You know what is weird to me about Elvis? Elvis couldn't be about nowadays because he's just kissing random women all the time. He just pulls them up and just kisses them on stage. Anyway, we're getting off a tangent. But you couldn't get away with that now. He just walks up to women in the crowd and kisses them. Oh, there you go, honey.
Yeah. 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 It, like Richard Dawson, I don't know what Richard Dawson had. It was kind of like, what do they call it in the UK? You know, Les Dennis did it. Family Fortunes. We had one called Family Feud. And the host in the 70s, his name was Richard Dawson, but he was also a really good character actor. He was in all like the World War II movies. And anyway, Richard Dawson, great actor. But his thing was kissing all of the women on Family Feud. And it was kind of gross. Like in the what do you call it? The European Vacation with Chevy Chase.
Yes.
That John Astin character where he's like trying to make out with Audrey is totally a slap in the face to Richard Dawson on Family Feud. Anyway, off topic. There I go. I'm good at this. You want to derail this train? Give it to me for 30 seconds.
Oh, you've not met J-Mac. That's the guy that we have on the show. That's the co-host.
I'm merely J-Mac. A guest today. I'm just helping Kevin out. But yeah, he's the man.
He's the man that derails the track. We can start
awesome.
An episode talking about the paranormal. And before you know it, he's talking about Bill Burr.
You know what? I know how that happens. And that is the byproduct of the YouTube generation. I love YouTube because I'll search for how to fix a leaky faucet. And then it's like alien invasion from 1939. Or was it a nuclear bomb? And then, deep state conspiracies. And then, painting squishies. And you just go down this rabbit hole that is nonsensical. I do it proudly.
Where you're totally like you're watching cat videos at 3 a.m. and by 5 a.m. 9/11 was an inside job. All that type
That's
of stuff.
Right. And now you're radicalized all because of those fucking cats. I know. It's true.
Find water at 2 a.m.
Now, those sons of bitches.
That's for this flat earth stuff.
You think you're gonna fool me now? I'm woke now. I'm woke. Yeah.
Oh, man. We need to have you back on the show more often, Brandon.
No, anytime. I'm around. I got a little setup here. We're cool. We can do this.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
Absolutely. Of course. You're welcome on the show anytime.
No, reach out anytime. I'm around. My Saturdays are made for this.
Good. Well, we will hold you to that.
Fair enough.
All the guys listening right now. Brandon Crane will come back on the show and we will theme an episode about something completely non-it related, right? And we'll go down that rabbit hole together.
Oh yeah. Be sure to go and hit up Brandon on Facebook as well. He's got his own Facebook page and Instagram. Have you got an Instagram, Brandon?
I favor the Instagram because it's sort of non-political, you know, which I get so mad. And it's not because I'm apathetic. It's because I just can't fucking believe that things are the way they are right now. Especially for you lot right now, it's kind of an interesting time. There's Instagram is my is my fave, and it's Brandon Crane TV. And then my website's got some updates and things. I do some blogging for, you know, the convention appearances and anything new in my life. Yeah, BrandonCrane.com. And that's it. That's the plug, man.
And when we next see you, which we will, because if you're doing the conventions, it's only a matter of time before we're at that same convention yet again. Yeah. We're going to catch up with you, and we will film lots with you.
Hey, we should just love go for a beer as well.
Oh yeah, no, I'm good. Ask Ben Fenlon and Neil Hibbert about that. We love to drink our way through places, but I think England is played out. So I think Scotland is probably the only, you know, sort of land left that we have yet to milk.
Oh, we will welcome you.
I think we beat the crap out of the English horse. I think we did 3 shows in 18 months. And I think, you know, For Love of Horror, it was great. You know, seeing people that we've seen before, you know, but it doesn't necessarily help the promoter, right? So, I think Scotland, it's like Scotland or bust.
Yeah, well, hey, we're from Scotland, so we will make that happen. And I promise, I will make a promise here on the Jibber Jabber podcast, right? If you guys come to Scotland, we will screen the miniseries of it at the local cinema, and you guys can come along. That would be insane.
We would love that.
That would be incredible.
We would love that. So let's make it happen. So Comic-Con Scotland next year, I'm going to get everybody to hashtag that for Comic-Con Scotland. Everybody hit up Monopoly Events and say we want to see OG losers. Yes, absolutely. We want to see them, and we will make that happen, all right? It's
awesome. No, I have to say, though, the Monopoly guys, they, and this isn't like ass-kissing. Honestly, people ask me how the show was, and I said, I'll never see another show like it.
Yeah.
Insane. I mean, it was that good. I can't begin to think about how that could be beat.
Yeah, that's what we keep saying, and then they beat it with the next one every time.
I don't know. It'll probably be too cool for us by its next incarnation. But, we're down. We love to come and play.
Perfect. Well, we will absolutely do that. You've been an absolute treasure on this show, Brandon, and we will have you back on. Thank you enough for coming on. So thanks very much, Brandon Crane.
Thank you very much, Brandon.
Hey, thanks you guys.
So there it is, our interview with Brandon Crane. What an absolute gent. And a massive thank you to Brandon for coming on the show. Massive thanks to Todd for coming on and doing this with us. We'll definitely be seeing more of Todd, and you'll be hearing more of Todd soon. And we're really looking forward to John Campiciano, or we'll just see what Brandon calls him, John Cappuccino. Yeah, so next week, remember to tune in to hear Jordan J-Mac himself speak to John Campopiano about his latest venture with the It Project, the short film, which you guys will definitely need to check out when it comes out. Thanks again for listening to this show. You guys have been amazing for listening. Brandon Crane's been amazing for coming on the show and giving us his time. I'll not go as far as to say I've been amazing, but if you did like the show, like, subscribe, do all that cool stuff. If you maybe leave us a little review, maybe we'll be able to get more guests for you guys, because people will take us seriously. Thanks again, and we will see you next week.
Where are you guys anyway?
We're sort of a club.
Yeah, the losers club.
You want in?
Yeah, I do.
Hey, we're 7 now. Lucky 7.
I want to kill it.
I just want to forget about it.
It's not just us. It's all the other kids, too. Who's going to be next?
It kills kids, damn it.
You killed my brother George, you bastard.
Let's see you now.
Maybe it's the water.
The water? Maybe it's the sewer.
Hi, Georgie. Was it Pennywise?
Big white guy, red nose. About 75 feet tall, mouth full of razor sharp teeth.
You smell that? That's death. Losers fight it. Losers die.
They all float.